saying it's just 5 inches away from breaking its all-time snowfall record of 668 inches set in 2010. By the way, if you haven't done the math in your head, that's more than 55 feet of snow. California has been racked by powerful atmospheric river storms. I'm John Schaefer, USA News.
The Dell Technologies semi-annual sale is on, with limited quantity deals on top tech. Save on select PCs powered by the latest 12th-gen Intel Core processors, like thin and light XPS 13 laptops, Inspiron laptops, and 2-in-1s. Plus, get savings on select accessories, free shipping, and monthly payment options with Dell Preferred Account. Save today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
The views and opinions expressed during this show are those of the hosts and guests only. In no way do they represent the views, positions, or opinions expressed or implied of WGSO 990 AM or North Shore Radio, LLC.
Funky Uncle Live is pleased to continue its charitable work for musicians and gig workers with an 8-night jam for the homeless during Jazz Fest beginning April 27th at Zony Mash, located at 3940 Thalia Street. April 28th and 29th will feature Experiencing the Meters. Experiencing the Meters is New Orleans' quintessential funk band, the creators of funk, led by founding member and Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award recipient Leo Nocentelli, along with David and Russell Batiste, Donald Ramsey, and Bill Dickens. Rounding off the series starting on April 27th will be the New Orleans Suspects, Bonerama, Tribal Gold featuring Big Chief Juan Pardo, members of the Golden Comanche and the New Orleans Suspects, Stealin' Peaches, Panic Stricken, and the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. Proceeds from all shows will support the New Orleans homeless community through Grace at the Greenlight and Positive Legacy. For more information and to get your tickets, go to funkyuncle.live.
Now you're calling me for attention, feeling for attention. Say you're looking for that action. Got my name all in your mentions. Oh, now you're coming to your senses. Yeah, now you're calling me for attention, feeling for attention.
Welcome to Conversations with Ron Richardson on WGSO 990 AM, where we can be open and honest about real-life issues such as disability, mental health, and everyday life. Now, let's have a real conversation with WGSO host Ron Richardson.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Conversations with Ron Richardson here on WGSO 990 AM. We can also be heard on WGSO.com and on the Mixler app. And we are back for another one. First of all, guys, I want to always shout out my people and always shout out my supporters. Each and every week, you guys have been rocking with me and giving me good feedback on Conversations with Ron Richardson. And I hope it continues. So, I would like to welcome my longtime close personal friend, my big sister, Miss Direna Phillips. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Welcome to Conversations with Ron Richardson. How have you been?
I've been well. I can't complain. I'm having a great time, and I'm glad to see you in your element.
Yeah. And, I just want to give a little background on me and Direna, man. We kind of like indirectly grew up together. Her and my mom are best friends, and I think, how long have they been knowing each other?
Oh, well over
35. Well over 30 years.
30? Oh, yeah, over 35 years.
Over 35 years, man. And
they
think
salt and pepper.
Yeah, salt and pepper. And we used to see each other as kids, mm-hmm. if I can remember.
Yeah.
And you a little older than me, but, you went off to college, and I went off to school, and you were doing your thing, and we kind of reconvened and reconnected a few years back, and the gang is all back together again.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So, each and every week, man, I give you a topic, and I bring you a topic concerning chronic illnesses. And this week, it won't be any different. So, Direna, she has an interesting story, and she is a breast cancer survivor, right?
Yes, keyword survivor.
Survivor, man. So, why don't you tell us your story, and why don't you go into how that whole situation with breast cancer got started with you?
Okay, I was diagnosed at age 39, mm-hmm. and it was because I detected a lump. I felt a lump. Mm-hmm. And this was after I had had a negative mammogram the year before, and after I had a negative ultrasound. So you can't always rely on the screening test. So, you know, me feeling the breast, I had to advocate for myself, and then they did another mammogram and ultrasound and detected the cancer.
And you would think, going through the screening test, that they would be 99.9% accurate, right? But that's not always the case.
It's not always the case. And back then, the test was in 3D. Legislation came afterwards where all mammograms had to be 3D. You have dense breasts, which a lot of African-American women have, which it's hard to detect a mass or a lump on a screening when your breasts are dense. And so that was one of the changes that could have been a problem. And also when you come in as a 38, 37-year-old, which is what the age I was at my first screening, they kind of don't think you have it. They just say, okay, so it could have been a rush test. A lot of factors go in that.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, at a certain age, they automatically don't think, because we're young, that we have this and so, but that's not always the case, because something can come up and, you know, you have to deal with an issue that you may or may not want to deal with.
Absolutely.
So when you got diagnosed, let's look at the diagnosis. You were 39, right?
39 at the diagnosis.
Okay, so.
Stage three. And that was a year after having a negative mammogram. So I went from thinking I didn't have cancer to stage three.
Okay, so why don't you break down exactly through your experience what stage three breast cancer is?
Okay, well, there are four stages. There's actually a zero stage, which a lot of people, and I just always wonder, how do they detect zero stage? Because that means, for me, it means your doctor's really listening to you and really advocating for you to even detect if you have stage zero. That means it's like in its infancy and it's very much treatable and curable. But at stage three, it's like the next stage is stage four, which is a cancer that is you're going to live with for the rest of your life, because it means it's gone to other parts of your body.
Right. So what was your first initial reaction? You're a young woman. You're an attorney, correct? And you kind of like living life, and when your doctor hits you with this diagnosis, like, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
A little disbelief, because I had these negative tests. I was like, oh, maybe it's an error. It's wrong. Something's going, you know. So disbelief, but then when they verified it, I think I went through a season of shock. Like, I couldn't even cry or get emotional, because I was numb at that point. I was like, this can't be.
Right.
So it was shock, and I think I went through all. And then I went through anger. You know, I was angry at the medical system, because there are disparities. It is a true element. Racial disparities, all kind of disparities, for whatever reason.
And that's what I was going to say, like, what are some of the disparities that you or that people may deal with?
A lot of medical professionals are comfortable with our pain. If we have physical pain, or we're telling, like, I was told when I had the pain in my breast, oh, well, you're taking too much caffeine. And I'm like, and basically sent me out of there to die. And so I had to come back and really, really advocate for myself. And it wasn't so much me. I had a great primary doctor that's been with me since I've been in my 20s. And they did another test. And they were like, it was 2 months later after they said, you're fine. And then they were like, wait a minute, come back in. Did you injure your breast between 1 and 2 months? And I'm like, no. And they were like, well, we just want to do some other standard testing. And those testing show, you know, the real deal.
And the biggest thing, you know, that I try to preach on my show is advocating for yourself. Disability and chronic illness, if you don't take charge of what you have going on, nobody else will. You have to know how to speak up, and that's what you did, is speak up for yourself, because otherwise you would have just been left with, you know, I can go home and just live with this for the rest of my life, but you weren't going to take that, correct?
Exactly, and I won't take all the credit. I have a great primary care doctor, so when I went to the gynecologist and all of those specialists, and I was like, but I'm still having this pain, you know, she advocated for me to to go and get additional screening. And then I just happened to go and get the, and so I went ahead with what they said. I was like, okay, I don't have any cancers. Mm-hmm. So when I go back for my mammogram, for the mammogram at age 39, mm-hmm. That's when they detected it.
All right. So we gonna touch on that. We got to go to this first commercial break. This is Conversations with Ron Richardson here on WGSO 990 AM, WGSO.com. And we can also be heard, if you're on the go, on the Mixler app. So download the Mixler app and you can hear Conversations with Ron Richardson. I have Dyrena Phillips, my sister, in the building with me. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. This is Conversations with Ron Richardson. Peace.
I'm Huck, an active Christian who loves Louisiana. One of my goals is to bring Louisiana's education from 50th to number one.
And I'm Dave. I'm not afraid of government bureaucrats. I fear God. Our rights and freedoms come from Him.
This is Liberty or Lockdown. Please join us on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on WGSO 990 AM and WGSO.com.
Does your business need to boost sales or drive customer loyalty? Talk to Sir Speedy. Our direct mail pros can get your company in front of the right people with our comprehensive direct mail and mailing services. All you have to do is share your goals with us and we can do the rest. Get the ball rolling and send your next direct mail project to us. Call Sir Speedy at 504-586-9812. Or visit us online at SirSpeedyNewOrleans.com. That's 504-586-9812. We do it.
When the time came, I knew I had to find a place where Mom would be safe and active while still feeling independent. A place that was close to all of us and everything she needed. Locally owned and operated in the heart of Gonzales, I found Francois Ben Senior Living. They specialize in independent and assisted living and memory care.
Call 225-647-BEND for more information on our special pre-leasing offers.
Francois Ben Senior Living. Experience life as it should be.
Hey, Mimi, we're moving.
Moving to Wednesdays at 5.
You can check out He Said, She Said on a new day.
Hump day.
A new day, but we'll still be discussing and debating the hot topics.
And take your phone call.
You can listen to us on 990 AM, WGSO, WGSO.com.
And find out who's right. Of course, that's me.
No, of course, that's me. I've been doing this 23 years, Mimi.
Practice makes perfect.
So you see, we'll have plenty to talk about on He Said, She Said.
Wednesdays at 5.
Right here on WGSO.
It sounds so good to me. You gotta get on, get on.
We are back here on WGSO 990 AM, Conversations with Ron Richardson, man. That's Jodeci, Get On Up. You remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jodeci. I love Jodeci. I love Jodeci.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Old school 90s R&B, man. And we are back with my sister, Miss Dyrena Phillips, and she is here talking about her breast cancer diagnosis at the young age of 39, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you were talking about the diagnosis. So you know, they did another test and it came back positive.
Right. So mm-hmm. I did an early mammogram. Usually they were recommending mammograms at age 40, but I did mine 2 years earlier because it was, you know, mm-hmm. in my family. And so I was able to get an earlier screening done, an earlier mammogram, which came back negative. Then I detected a lump, went in, and they were like, oh, no, it's just, you know, it's a lump, but it's not cancer. Go ahead on. And so the year that came up for another mammogram, just a procedural, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's when they detected it. So it's important to get your screenings, but it's also important to check your own breasts, men and women.
Now, I want to touch on something that is a little weird to me, because here you are, you're putting your trust in the medical institution, and They tell you one thing and they tell you something else and they just tell you go home. So psychologically, like, what was that like for you?
I want to say that was one of the hardest parts because I didn't trust them. So 1 month, I don't have cancer. And then just 2 months later, I go in and I not only have cancer, but it's a stage 3 and it's in my lymph nodes. It's in, you know, it's past my breast. It's like going into other parts of my body.
So it's literally spreading.
Yeah, so that didn't happen in 2 months. It was spreading when they told me to go home, essentially, and die.
Right.
But when I came back for just the, you know, checkup, you know, for the schedule, you get it once a year. Mm-hmm. Then they detect something. So they immediately asked me, did I injure my breast? No, I didn't injure my breast.
So you mean to tell me you didn't have any symptoms or any? So you did?
I felt the lump.
Okay, you felt the lump.
I felt the lump, and I went in, and they was, you know, the words were, oh, yeah, we feel the lump, but, you know, your breasts are dense, and you're probably drinking too much caffeine and eating too much chocolate. Those were the words.
Right. And during my research, when I was looking up symptoms of breast cancer, that's two things that they found, that some women's breasts were denser than others, mm-hmm. and it could be diet, sugar, chocolate, mm-hmm. coffee, what caffeine, whatever the mm-hmm. case may be. Also
genetic.
Right, genetics. How should a woman or man, when they go through self-examination of their breasts, how should they do it?
Great, great question. So self-examination, you should do it at least once a month at the same time of the month. And the reason why that is because there's certain hormonal changes that you go through where your breasts change a little bit during the month. So mm-hmm. you always want to make sure, you know, a lot of people say check it on the first, but whatever date you check it, make sure it's the same each month. So your breasts, you can kind of gauge, oh, my breasts are like this time of the month. So you're looking for differences. You want to be so familiar with your breasts. Get your partner to check your breasts. Mm-hmm. Just do it at the same time every month so you notice a difference, especially when you have dense breasts, which are essentially or maybe like lumpier breasts in general.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know, you know, okay, I have these little areas right here, but then you feel another lump. That's what you're looking for, the differences.
Right. And, you know, this is something that men don't think about.
Absolutely.
Breast cancer, because, I mean, it's not as common as it is in women. So what would you tell all the men out there?
You know, breast cancer is in pink. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's commercialized so much, so it's almost like it was kind of offensive to me a little bit, all of the pink stuff. I think it's a little bit overdone. But men, breast cancer is in pink. Check your breasts. Notice changes, discharge, lumps, anything. It doesn't have a gender. It is just, you know.
All right. So did you do any research after your diagnosis? Like, did you, you know, research how many people have been diagnosed with breast cancer?
Well,
what did you find?
Yes. So when I got diagnosed, I had to attend like a class and mm-hmm. they had to get me ready for chemo. So they gave me this big, thick book and I read that book from the beginning to the end. And that's where I learned everything that I learned about cancer. I learned the different stages. I learned that there was a zero stage where meaning you can find it, the breast cancer is isolated to a milk duct or like a part of the breast that's not detectable mm-hmm. Outside of, you know, biopsy or additional screening. So that's where I really learned everything about cancer. Once I got the diagnosis, that's when I started doing my research.
Right. So doing your research, like, how did family and friends come to your aid and come to your need?
Okay, so once you get diagnosed, there's one thing they do called genetic testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ask you all of these family questions. Mm-hmm. And you have to tell them, like, on my paternal side, maternal side, this person had cancer, this person. And they literally draw a diagram in the office while they're doing your genetic testing. And you do some blood work, and it comes back to see if you have a specific gene which makes you more prone to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
This was done for me after the cancer diagnosis. So that's how my family got involved.
So what's the process with that? How do they do the whole process?
It's basically they start with a history,
okay.
A history and a questionnaire of your history. And so, like, if you have my father had colon cancer, and mm-hmm. there's a link somewhere with colon cancer and breast cancer. But come to find out, I did all of that, and I did not have the gene, but I had had cancer.
Right.
So that's what I would tell men, you know, who just want to be proactive. If you have some of a history of cancer, of breast cancer in your family, mm-hmm. talk to your doctor and say, hey, I got a history in my family. Can I do genetic screening?
Right.
Just to kind of put you at peace, because they can do blood work. If you don't have the gene, you don't have the gene.
Right. And, you know, ironically, I don't know if you knew this or not, with cerebral palsy, I don't have the gene for cerebral palsy.
Wow.
But I have cerebral palsy.
Wow.
So somewhere down the line, when I was born,
mm-hmm.
I don't know who had the gene for cerebral palsy, but it was passed along to me. So I can't pass along to my kids if I ever do decide to have kids. And that's mm-hmm. the thing about any chronic illness or any disability or anything that you deal with. You know, you may not have the gene, or it may not even be in your family history. Sometimes it just pops up.
Right.
Yeah, man. So, right. You know, moving forward, what was the support of your family and friends like at that particular time?
Initially, I got the most support from my dad's side, you know, because mm-hmm. my aunt, she had breast cancer, and she had a mastectomy, mm-hmm. and she was in her 70s, and she's just the smallest, cutest little lady, and she was sitting by my bedside.
Right.
This is when I'm about to have my mastectomy, so I'm in the hospital. You know, all my family's around me, but specifically my aunt, she was standing there, and she's just this classy lady, and she pulls out her little thing that she uses to camouflage. She was like, see, uh-huh. you don't, I'm like, wow, I never knew that you were doing this
right.
all my life.
Right.
But she was letting me know that it's okay. It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Right.
And so initially my dad's family, they really rallied around me because I had just lost my dad
right.
2.5 years before my diagnosis. So they were like, you know, how would we want us to be there for? And when I tell you they were there, they were there.
All right, so what about the young lady, Darlene?
Oh, yeah. My mom was there, but I'm going to tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
My mom took it harder than me. So
right.
I had to protect her. Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, there it is. You're dealing with the illness, mm-hmm. and you have to be strong for your mom.
Yeah, I had to
How was that?
Her. We called in additional troops, my mom's baby sister, Renee.
Okay.
I couldn't have done it without her. She was that person that I could talk to. And when I had my first chemo, mm-hmm. I went to her house. So she was there with me when I was sick. And so we had to shield my mom. And so we enlisted backup. But yeah, you don't understand how it affects the people that love you most. That is painful for them.
All right. Hold tight, because we got that bottom of the hour pesky news break. So you know what? We're going to take this quick break right here. I got my big sis here with me on Conversations with Ron Richardson. And this is WGSO 990 AM and WGSO.com. We can also be heard on the Mixler app. And we'll be right back after the news, y'all. Stay tuned. Conversations with Ron Richardson.
Looking for future leaders we can trust and believe in? Look no further than the high school student athletes right here in Louisiana. High school sports teach young people how to be effective leaders. It begins by making their grades and being on time for practice. It includes learning to listen, following directions, accepting responsibility, being a good role model. And it's about respect for officials, opponents, the rules, and each other. The result? It transcends sports. It gives us hope for the future. High school sports, there's so much more than just a game. This message presented by the Louisiana High School Athletic Association and the Louisiana High School Athletic Directors Association.
Let's talk about America. Not taxes or tweets or the issues that divide us, but how incredible our country is. Left, right, up, down, state lines to winding coastlines. Whether you come home to a crowded city street, tree-lined suburb, or sleepy small town, everyone deserves to live in a clean, green, and thriving community. And we all share in the responsibility to create beauty that ripples from one neighborhood to another and one block to the next. We are Keep America Beautiful, the nonprofit working with millions of people just like you to end littering, improve recycling, and beautify our communities. Because every mindful action and sustainable habit has a positive impact, and it all adds up. Learn how you can join Keep America Beautiful.
Louisiana Radio Network News, I'm Michelle Southern.
Together,
Coach Kim Mulkey was asked about the Elton John-like pink feathered blazer she wore in LSU's 66-63 win over Utah Friday, sending the Tigers to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2008. She says, "We like to be flashy in Louisiana, and she's just filling the bill for her home state." The score remained close that entire game, and Mulkey says it was a tough matchup.
"I just thought it was two heavyweights going at it. And that's what I told their coach after the game. I said, somebody had to win and somebody had to lose. We just made a few more plays."
LSU will face Miami tomorrow at 6 p.m. with a trip to the Final Four on the line. Today is an election day in Louisiana where voters will decide on several races and proposals. The Secretary of State's office says 7 parishes have races on the ballot, 12 have propositions, and 9 have both. Polls close at 8 p.m. tonight, and anyone in line by that time will still be allowed to vote. Louisiana Radio Network.
Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Are your deductibles too high? Or are you completely uninsured? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Healthcare Help Desk can help you now, when people need help the most. Health insurance laws and rules have changed. If you have Obamacare, are uninsured, or your premiums are too high, call Healthcare Help Desk. It's free. New healthcare plans are available, and you may qualify for dental coverage and lower copays and deductibles. Make the free call now. Top quality coverage at the lowest prices anywhere. You may be paying too much and not even know it. In these troubled times, healthcare is more important than ever. Don't let another day go by without health insurance. Policies are being offered with very low copays and deductibles. So if you're uninsured, underinsured, or paying too much, call Healthcare Help Desk.
Call 800-301-7166. 800-301-7166. 800-301-7166.
Hey, it's Kevin Carr with your personal sneak preview invitation to join me on Sunday evening from 8 to 9 for Fat Guys at the Movies. Each week, I give you my take on the newest movies and movie news, but in a fun way. Not like those stuffy movie review snobs who take themselves way too seriously. I tell you if the new movies rock or not. Yes, it's fun for all ages with Fat Guys at the Movies. I'll see you Sunday evening at 8 on WGSO 990 AM.
Hey y'all, The Beat Exchange has a new time slot, Mondays at 7 p.m. on WGSO, 990 a.m. in New Orleans, The Beat Exchange with Barbara Hoover.
You might be afraid to speak out for fear of cancel culture or losing your job. Christian Garrick Show on WGSO is your platform, noon to 2, weekdays, right here on 990 a.m. WGSO.
Join me, BJ Rust, every weekday at 6 p.m. for the Something to Say radio show. We'll talk sports, music, current events, everything in between. That's weekdays, 6 p.m. only on WGSO 990 a.m.
Good morning, class. A quick head count. Tiffany.
Here.
Zach.
Yup.
Steven. Is he absent again?
For many kids, just getting to school feels like a challenge. Staying through graduation is even harder. That's where Communities and Schools comes in. A powerful community of caring adults, working with vulnerable kids in schools every day, helping them overcome the barriers that stand in the way of learning. Hunger, homelessness, health problems, and even emotional trauma. Communities in Schools. We're inside schools partnering with teachers and counselors, empowering at-risk kids by providing supportive relationships. doing whatever it takes to help them thrive in school and have brighter futures. Communities and schools. We're in schools to help kids stay in school. See how we help all kids succeed at communitiesandschools.org.
Cause ain't no way I'm gonna let you stop me from causing man. When I say I'm gonna do something, I do it. I don't give a damn what you think. I'm doing this for me. So the world feed it beans. It's gassed up. If things are stopping me, I'm gonna be what I set out to be. Without a doubt, I'm tired of bleeding.
WGSO 990 AM, and we are not afraid. Right? We are not afraid, man.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So that was Eminem with Not Afraid. And as I say, we are not afraid to talk about the issues, the real issues, health issues, mental issues, whatever you guys want to talk about. And Big Sis, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I love giving my testimony. It's purpose to your pain.
Yeah, so you were saying before the break, you know, family. The family played a major part in your emotional support,
mm-hmm.
and getting through that first initial shock of you being diagnosed with cancer, right?
Absolutely. I had my family to lean on, and not just emotional support, you know, physical support, you know, bringing you something to eat when you can't, you don't feel like moving or getting up. They really kicked in. They did it.
Right. So people may or may not know you're an AKA.
And
she reps this hard, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So you being an AKA, how? Yeah, she's showing the jacket off and she repping.
We taking over the city in April too, you know. We having regionals. So yeah.
You had to throw that in there, right?
Yeah.
All right. Look. So, you know, how did your sorority step in and help you, your sister step in and help you when, you know, you were diagnosed and everything?
Well, full disclosure.
Go ahead.
I didn't share with my sorority sister.
Really?
Really, I didn't. Okay. I knew at some point I would, mm-hmm. but I wasn't ready. And, I mean, I shared it with one of my closest friends, which was my line sister. And
right.
So ironic, she sent me a care package. And, like, the first day of my chemo, she wore a T-shirt and sent me the same T-shirt. So mm-hmm. We had the same shirt on my first day. But I didn't share it with my sorority sisters. I was forced to, though.
Okay, so I want to ask this question. Why not?
I was more focused on surviving. I really wanted to live. And I won't say it didn't dawn on me, but I felt like if I was sharing with everybody, it was almost kind of like doing your rounds, like, okay, this is what I'm going through. I may or may not be here. But I didn't want to do that because I didn't even want to speak that.
Right. You didn't want to manifest that.
Yeah. I didn't want to give it any legs. So I was like, mm-hmm. you know, once I get through this, then I'm telling, you know, we're going to have a big old party. I'm going to tell everybody what I went through and what happened.
Right.
But God said, no, you, it's my testimony. You tell them.
So at what point, because I want to touch on something with me too, but at what point did it click and you said, you know what? It's okay. It's okay for me to talk about.
My wig fell off.
Now, I think I know this story. I do, because we had a conversation about it one weekend, but why don't you tell that story to my listeners?
Okay, so we had my 20th year anniversary in my sorority, mm-hmm. and I had my mom, who's a beast at creating wigs. She did a custom wig,
yeah,
that didn't look like a wig. And I was at homecoming. Nobody knew anything but my closest friends.
Okay,
we're all sitting in this building together, and I lean my head back.
You lean your head back.
I lean my head back, and okay. When I say it wasn't like a lace. It was a wig. You wouldn't have known. They didn't know. And I said, I have two choices. I could go behind this chair and put this wig on backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But so I went behind the chair, picked the wig up, and they didn't even notice. They were like laughing. We were like in a moment doing some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed it to my line sister sitting next to me. I said, Nicole, put this in my purse. And she looked at me and fell out laughing. And they immediately all surrounded me
right.
in a circle and sang our song. And mm-hmm. that was validation right there.
Similar story with me too, right? So for the longest time, I don't know if you knew this, but you probably didn't. But I didn't talk about my disability, which is cerebral palsy. So I have a friend who lives in Wisconsin, and she was like, you know, Ron, it's time for you to tell your story. After my grandmother died, going on 6 years ago now, I was at home and I was like feeling down because, you know, Dayton was really, really hard at that point. I was just dealing with my own personal thing. And so she called me and she was like, you know, what are you waiting on? Tell your story. Tell, you know, people that don't know you're dealing with cerebral palsy that you're dealing with. And this is what you deal with. So my grandmother passing, that played a part in me talking to her, and her just being there, you know, helped me get through. That's when I started with the podcast. That's when I started just being more comfortable in my own skin. And when you're dealing with a chronic illness like cancer, or you're dealing with a disability like I deal with, sometimes you're not comfortable talking about it, right?
Right. And but to piggyback off what you said, mm-hmm. you know, and you're talking about your grandmother and helping you come to that realization, there's a purpose for our pain. And so it gives my life more meaning and more purpose to say, I didn't go through this for nothing. So it's to share, to help some. It's not my testimony. Mm-hmm. So I can't hold it to myself. I have to share with somebody. And my way of sharing it is to help somebody else who, to prevent it or to detect it early or to understand, or like you can show them that you can live a great, awesome life with it. Mm-hmm. But if you don't share it, how would you give a purpose to your pain?
Right. And you know how I run around.
You stay gone. I'm like, this is the only guy that would tell me, oh, I have to take a rain check. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, man.
So my ego can't handle it.
don't gas me up.
Okay,
don't.
I'm sorry.
I mean, you could, but you know.
I mean, that's true. That did happen.
Right. So, you know, let's transition. You know, you've been through the emotional hardship of it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going through the chemotherapy. You know, what was that like?
Oh, man. I've blocked out a lot of it, but chemo, it is what it is. It's poison going through your body. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a experience in itself that's kind of like, I compartmentalized that part. Mm-hmm. But they give you, what people don't understand is when you get in the chemo, they mm-hmm. give you like a whole grocery list of drugs before they even put the chemo in your body, just so your body can withstand it. They can't even put the chemo in you with in your vein. You have to get what they call a port. And it's like a box they put inside of you where they can put the poison in because your veins will collapse and burn with the chemo. So
really?
Yeah. So really? There's a port. Uh-huh. So this is a scar. They took my port out. But okay. it was like a little box you could feel protruding out of your skin.
So, I mean, like, psychologically, that had to be hard for you, right?
Yeah. I dealt with the psychological part afterwards. But going through, like I'm saying, like it's so you're so focused on living. That's like somebody attacking you. You're so focused on getting off the attack, and then after the fact, you're like, oh my God, I could have died. So
right.
At the moment, you're just trying to live, like whatever y'all need to do.
All right, so let's transition again. You know, you've gone through the emotional things, and you know, family. What did Dyrena do for herself after everything? The process started, you were going through the chemotherapy, you were going through the emotional and the personal issues and the mental issues. Like, what did you do for self that helped you get through the diagnosis?
Therapy.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't go to therapy before. You know, I always felt like, oh my God, you need therapy. What's wrong with you? So I started going to therapy right like on the cusp of the end of my treatment, and that helped me because it helped me to navigate through some of the things I was suppressing, like the anger, the hurt, you know, the body issues. So therapy was one of the things that I did for myself.
And that's another thing, you know, we're going to touch on a little bit, but our people, we don't go to therapy. You know, we internalize a lot and we hold a lot in because we're afraid of what people may or may not think of us.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And I mean, there have been situations where I think I need somebody to talk to, but mm-hmm. I don't go because I'm like, okay, I don't want nobody to know that side of me or what I got going on. So therapy really did help you, correct?
Absolutely. Because if you look about it, if you think about it, you're talking to somebody in your family, you're talking to your friends. Mm-hmm. If they can hold their peace and let you finish, that's one issue. Or
all right, hold that thought. We got to go to another break. This is Conversations with Ryan Richardson with my very, very special guest, my big sis, Dyrena Phillips, cancer survivor.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
And you know what? Hit us up, man. Give us a call if you want to talk to Dyrena, if you want to ask her some questions. Hit us up at 504-556-9696. This is Conversations with Ryan Richardson on WGSO 990 AM and on WGSO.com. We can also be heard on the Mixler app. We'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
Dedicated to the music we made, yeah. Now it's on Bone Thug, living on, came back the next year. Number one platinum song, we blew up from the dough. Then what do you know? Easy, rest his soul. Left us in the mess, I don't regret it, but we better get up and get it going. Everything's going wrong. Such a bone and nothing right.
Donate your vehicle and make a difference. WGSO 990 AM has partnered with Charitable Adult Rides and Services, also known as CARS, to allow you the opportunity to donate your car, truck, motorcycle, RV, or boat to our nonprofit organization. You may qualify for a tax deduction while supporting a cause that is near and dear to your heart. Simply go to WGSO.com and follow the link on our homepage. Vehicle donation pickup is always free to you, and most vehicles can be picked up within 24 to 72 hours. You'll receive an initial car donation receipt upon pickup, and then the CARS team will work to turn your car into cash to support our cause. Once your vehicle is sold, the CARS team will provide you proper tax forms in time to file. Their friendly donor support representatives are available 7 days a week to assist throughout the process. Again, for more information, go to WGSO.com.
WGSO 990 AM is the only locally owned and operated talk station in New Orleans. We feature 20 local hosts discussing a variety of topics. In an era when the daily newspaper is being discontinued and our competitors are out-of-state media conglomerates, we ask you, our listeners, to support local programming on a local station. To advertise or sponsor one of our great shows, contact me at jeff@wgso.com or call 504-669-6060. 7-6.
French Quarter Festival, presented by Chevron, celebrates their 40th anniversary April 13th to 16th. Enjoy 4 days of music from over 270 acts on 20 stages and food from over 60 culinary vendors spread throughout the French Quarter. Grab your friends and family. Everybody's invited. For more information, visit www.frenchquarterfest.org.
All right, all right, all right, all right. This is Conversations with Ryan Richardson on 990 AM, WGSO, or WGSO 990 AM. And we can also be heard on WGSO.com and on the Mixler app. And that was A Little Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge. I know you remember that one, right?
Oh, I love DeBarge. I love L. I'm obsessed.
Light-skinned brothers, huh?
Well, not just that. I mean, they was everything that exists.
Right. I always like to throw a little R&B in there to try to get the mood right here on Conversations with Ryan Richardson. So we talked about, you know, your process, the chemotherapy, and you were saying that they are literally injecting poison in your veins. And I asked you before the break, what did you do for you? So let's backtrack a little bit. What did you start doing for you? You went to therapy.
Started getting more balance in my life, being more intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my life has much more purpose now. I shifted my work. I'm an attorney, but now I work with a nonprofit. So it's important for me to do work that's a little bit more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. So touch on your nonprofit. What law do you practice, first of all?
Well, right now I'm working with veterans and people in danger of homelessness, working with, I just finished doing much work with parents who were in danger of losing their kids because of addiction, incarceration. So I'm still doing the work that I love, but it's at a, it's just shifted to a little bit more meaning for me. You know, it's not so much about making $1 million, although, you know, I'm still going to get my lottery tickets, but it is about purpose.
Right. You know? So when you say purpose, what's your purpose?
Right now, my purpose is to live on purpose. Like, not just exist, but every day has to have a meaning. Every day I want to touch somebody. I want to tell my story. I want to lift. I want to light up the room. I want to, you know, I want to be a joy to be around, and I want to just lift as I climb. So, all right.
And you touched on working with veterans, and, you know, a lot of people don't know that veterans go through a lot of things. So why don't you expound on, you know, some of the things that you've experienced working with your clients?
Well, the least of these is something that I'm passionate about too, and not just veterans, but just the least of these people that are overlooked in our society. Mental illness is real. You know, like a lot of people see somebody homeless on the street or, you know, panhandling and say, oh, well, they cause, no, it's so many circumstances that causes a person to be in that, that circumstance. So, you know, you just have to have compassion. And so I like to look at the whole person, you know, going to combat, that's enough to make anybody lose their mind.
Right. And, you know, us as people, human beings, we don't ever think about, okay, you know, the cause of why that person is in the current situation at the end.
Right.
You know, people always look at how people react, but they don't never look at what made that person react that way, right?
Exactly. Right. Like I just said, therapy was one thing I did for myself. What if the veteran was able to get the therapy they needed? You know, right. If I didn't have therapy, I'd probably be out here cutting people, doing all kinds of stuff. So,
right. You know, it just helps to talk to somebody that is, I guess, an unbiased party.
Right.
Right. So how did your therapist, how did you approach therapy, first of all, when you started?
Well, I didn't seek it. It was offered, and there was a specialist that specifically worked with cancer patients. So she helped, she helped me navigate through that process, because it's a process.
So how did she help you navigate through the process? Explain some of that to us.
You know, women, we go through a lot of body issues. So not to go deep, but like, for instance, losing a body part is traumatic. And I thought it was vanity. And she was like, no, if you lost your arm, how would you feel? And I'm like, I would need my arm. She was like, well, that's how you need your breast. That's you identify as a woman through that. So that was one part.
And that's the thing, you know, when you look at a woman and, you know, you think breast, you think of it as sexualized, but it's really not, right?
No.
Right.
Right. And I thought it was vanity, but it's absolutely not vanity.
Right.
It's like who you are.
Right. And when you approached therapy and when you started, how did the process help you through? What did it do for you?
It actually even went before cancer and helped me get clarity for the way that I am in a lot of things. And it just helped me find balance and understand that I'm not defined by that experience, but that I can take this experience and help other people in addition to helping myself.
Right.
So it did a lot. So.
Right. And, you know, I always say, you know, we're not defined by our disabilities. We're not defined by our chronic illnesses. It's a part of us, but it's not who we are.
Exactly.
You know, you have to keep going. You have to keep striving for better. You have to do what makes you comfortable and what works for you. Anybody can tell you, you know, you shouldn't be doing this or you shouldn't be doing that, but you got to do what works for you, and you have to find your own way to cope with, you know, dealing with a chronic illness or a disability. So you went through counseling. So let's talk about health. How did your eating habits change? How did that come into play with your cancer diagnosis?
Well, one way, too, and I want to leave with everybody, is being in control of your health, a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. What you eat, exercise is preventative as well. Not saying that if you exercise every day, you're not going to get it, but right. it is one way to be proactive. So be healthy, take care of you. You can't pour from an empty cup. That's what I want to leave with everybody. Take care of you. A diagnosis is not the end of the world, but it will remind you to take care of your temple.
Toxicity too.
Stress will kill you.
Eliminate that also.
Yes. So yeah. I had to, and that's not a lot of the work that I've shifted in what I do. You know, I did murder trials. So I did all of that early on in my law career. So not doing that anymore. I'm still doing, you know, the work, but it's just the stress level has decreased a lot in my choices.
So being an attorney, you know, do you take a lot of that home with you?
I did, and I do, but I've learned to compartmentalize it. Well, I don't want to advocate compartmentalizing
things, but I've
learned to put it in perspective and do my part that I can every day, but understand that life is about balance and you have to rest. I can't help you if I'm not rested and I'm not whole. So I try not to take it on and, you know, internalize
carry
it.
With you, right. That's what I tell people all the time, man, especially working in media, you know. There may be a topic that I may or may not agree with. You know, there may be a host that I may or may not agree with. And, you know, you cannot let it get to you. You just got to kind of like dust your shoulders off and say, hey, you know what? Let's pick ourselves up and move on, right?
Agree to disagree.
There you go. All right. So, you know, you eat pretty healthy.
Right. Know,
with your diagnosis and everything. So what's some of your guilty pleasures as far as food goes?
Well, you know what? My guilty pleasure is not eating like 3 balanced meals a day. Like I will wait all day. Like I haven't eaten breakfast. Mm-hmm. So that's something my guilty pleasure is. I like coffee. I'll drink coffee. But the best thing you can do for yourself is be intentional about your diet. That means meal prepping. I like to do that because it takes the workout of, you know, what you're going to eat every day.
All right. So, man, you know, first of all, I want to thank you for coming down, doing an interview with me. And
you're welcome.
We're going to have to do another one.
Absolutely.
And we say we've been trying to get to lunch and all this, so we're going to try to do lunch real soon.
Okay. All right.
So, in closing, you know, what do you have to tell somebody who is dealing with a chronic illness or breast cancer or any type of illness for that matter?
You're not defined by your illness, and you take that pain and you channel it to help somebody else.
All right. This has been Conversations with Ron Richardson and my big sis, Miss Darina Phillips. Thank you once again.
You're welcome. Love you.
Love you, too. We'll see you next time. All right.
All right.
That's it. See you guys next week. Same time, same place. This is Conversations with Ron Richardson on WGSO 990 AM and WGSO.com. See you guys next week. Peace.
Hi, I'm Huck, an active Christian who loves Louisiana. One of my goals is to bring Louisiana's education from